In our passage, we are in 8th century BC Palestine, and the superpower of the day is Assyria. Assyria are not a nice group of people. The way that they do is to go in and to point spears at people, throw up babies and catch them on spears, impale enemies on poles. There are stone engravings that were from the palaces of the Assyrians that actually lay out all of the various torture means that they used. They were known for being extremely violent. They removed people from their homelands, and they cut off limbs, cut off noses, did all sorts of things, and recorded these events on these palace walls. Well, this is Assyria that is coming. They are known for this. And so, of course, as you can imagine, Israel, Syria, and Judah, three little countries in this part of Palestine, are afraid and looking at them coming down. Last week we spoke about how Israel and Syria had formed an alliance against little Judah because Judah wouldn't join their alliance against Assyria. There is much that nations fear. There is a really super critical moment in world history that we are watching going on in the midst of these pages. This is a critical moment when King Ahaz of Judah was confronted with God's word, encouraging him to trust in God and warning him against the tide of fear that was being aroused in his heart. He was told last week by God, if you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. This is what he's been told. It's a word for hard times, calling for clear-headed decision with very clear sense of why you are doing what you are doing with God in the picture. And each week I find that our exercise in reading all of this is to measure how close we walk to the context of what they are doing, how they are responding to their fears, and how they are exercising their faith. In Isaiah 8, Isaiah, whose name means, anyone remember? Quick test for you. The Lord is salvation. Isaiah means the Lord is salvation. Isaiah, whose name means the Lord is salvation, is told in verse 1 to write on a scroll the words, Meher Shalal Hashbaz. It's not clear why he's writing that in that verse. The words mean quick to the plunder, swift to the spoil. That note is written down with reliable witnesses on hand. In verse 2, we see that Uriah the priest and Zechariah are there to witness this moment. It's something super significant about those words that are meant to be recorded. There's a note of solemnity to those words. In verse 3, it becomes soon clear why those words are written down. He's told to name his son Meher Shalal Hashbaz. Now, you know what? I was watching a TV program the other day, and guess what name I saw coming up in the credits? Meher Shalal Hashbaz Ali. And I thought to myself, someone's still using that name today. So I celebrate someone using biblical names like that still. Is that my mic doing that funny noise? Meher Shalal Hashbaz. The reason he's told to name his son that is because before he has grown to say mum and dad, the nations of Syria and Israel will be dealt with. So it's a sign that Assyria will be quick to the plunder and swift to the spoil over Syria and Israel. You see, in Isaiah, names have meanings, and those meanings are messages into the middle of what's going on. Wow, I think we need to close up and bunker down, folks. It's like there's a hurricane that's hit us here in the church. It sort of adds to the drama to have this hurricane. So this is kind of helpful. It'd be really good if there was some thunder and lightning at just this moment as well. So Ahaz has been told not to fear these countries, these two small countries coming against him. But if Ahaz thought that was reason to gloat over Syria and Israel, he was wrong. In verse 7, we see that the Assyrians were coming like floodwaters on Judah also. Two reasons are given for why Judah would experience the floodwaters of Syria against it. Firstly, in verse 6, the people have rejected the gently flowing waters of Shiloh. The waters of Shiloh, gentle water course through Jerusalem, providing from the spring of Gihon, I think it is. And it's a reliable, gentle, not fancy, but always consistent water course that flows and that provides that all-important water that's needed, especially during a siege. Wasn't grand, wasn't in your face, constant and reliable. Has that just given up the ghost? God's provision was being likened to that spring. It is consistent, it is reliable, it is not flashy, but it is always there, nourishing them. Secondly, they are rejoicing over Rezin and the son of Remaliah, that is, over Israel and Syria, the kings of Israel and Syria coming against them. And again, the Assyrians are going to deal with them. You see, God over their enemies' downfall. That's just self-serving and it is unsympathetic. It doesn't show any regard for fellow mankind. And so time is called on that in this passage. And in verse 7, we see how the Assyrians would come in like rising floodwaters and overwhelm Judah. It's going to be this terrible flood that's going to come to the land of scary Assyria. But in the midst of all of this judgment, there's this glimmer of hope that's still available. And it's mixed up and it's right there in the middle of these words of judgment. You see, in verse 8, we read that even though the floodwaters of Assyrian invasions are rising, it'll come up to the neck. That's bad because it comes up to the neck. But it's good because it only comes up to the neck and it doesn't go over. Twice there's the mention of Emmanuel, meaning God with us. It's translated God with us in verse 8 and in verse 10. But it is the word Emmanuel, those two words. What makes of salvation? Well, it's God with us. It's Emmanuel is the reason for hope here. Though the land is overrun, a faithful remnant will be preserved because God is with them. Furthermore, though the nations plan their battles, three times in verse 9 they are told they will be shattered, but it will not stand because God is with his people. Here is this measure of God's grace in the middle of judgment. God is with us. From verse 11, God speaks a personal message to Isaiah directly. And he says to him, don't call conspiracy what these people call conspiracy. He's got to weigh up what are the things that people fear or call conspiracy. He's told to not fear what they fear. He has to consider what people fear, and he is not to go down that same avenue. So he is told to stand apart from the crowd, be different, consider what he should fear, and not fear what everybody else fears. And he is to lead by example. So what does that look like? God's words to Isaiah are, the Lord Almighty is the one you are to fear. He has to know who it is in the room that he needs to consider with the most highest regard. He is the one you are to fear. He is the one you are to dread. Isaiah needs to weigh the fears, weigh the concerns, and see that God's holiness is of greatest regard. That word for holiness in Hebrew, it's the same root word for weight. And it's used when Moses, you remember when Moses holds up his staff and his arms get heavy? kavod, that word for holiness, that and for weight. We're meant to associate weightiness with this idea of holiness. We're meant to hold the Lord with a great deal of weight, with the sense that he is the biggest, best player in the room. And we're meant to hold that perspective. If Isaiah will regard the Lord Almighty as holy, then the Lord himself will be Isaiah's sanctuary. That is, if he will set God apart with the highest regard, then he'll find that the Lord will bring this whole concept of God's safe sanctuary to his doorstep. He will know that God is with him. That reminds me so much of Psalm 91, verse 1. Whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. Isaiah's got to make his dwelling place with God, and he will know rest in the shadow of the Almighty. Verse 14 shows us the flip side of what happens when you don't regard the Lord as holy and when fear drives people along. In verse 14, it becomes really clear that the Lord will be one of two things. He will be your refuge or he will be your ruin. He will be a stone causing people to stumble and a rock that causes them to fall. I'm sure you know those words very well. I'm sure you hear the echoes of those words in Jesus' words. Jesus quotes those words in Matthew 21, verses 43 to 44, about himself. He says that because he knows that there would be people who stumble and fall on account of knowing him, because they did not hold him in the highest regard. But for those that do, he would be their safety and their hope and their refuge, and they would know sanctuary because they've recognized the very presence of God in their midst and embraced him. Well, in verse 16, Isaiah is told to bind up the testimony, seal up the law. And I take it that all that means is fasten that word secure and deep in the disciples' lives. They've got to hold on to this, and it's got to be in their DNA, in their lives. It's not about hiding it, it's about securing it fast. And in verse 17, Isaiah makes his own response very clear concerning this message. I love these words. Verse 17 of Isaiah 8. I will wait for the Lord, who is hiding his face from the house of Jacob. I will put my trust in him. Here am I and the children the Lord has given me. We are signs and symbols in Israel from the Lord Almighty who dwells on Mount Zion. How is he signs and symbols? Isaiah's name means the Lord is salvation. He's got a son, Maher Shalal Hashbag, quick to the plunder, swift to the spoil. Assyria will come and deal with the countries coming against him. And he's got another son, Shea Yashub, a remnant will return. There is judgment and there is hope ahead. And Isaiah and his sons stand as symbols and signs in Israel from the Lord Almighty. There are difficult times, but there's this sliver of hope and salvation found in God alone if they will hold on to God as the one of most significance. You see, the nations are not the ones to fear. Here they are, scary Assyria is coming, Israel and Syria are coming, and they've got to live in that moment and work out who's the biggest player in the room. And the biggest player isn't Assyria. The biggest player is God. And that question falls to us too. What is in the engine room of our hearts, our heads, and our emotions? What drives our decisions and our actions Will we be driven by our fears or the fears of those around us and be swept up in the concerns of humanity around us? Or will we regard the Lord as holy, of the most significant weight? I don't think it happens at the moment of crisis. I was thinking about Ahaz, and I was thinking about how he's that person that sacrifices his son in the fire to other gods, and thinking, this isn't a question just for this moment. Who is he before he comes to this moment? I think a large part of how Isaiah responds has begun a long time back, as he's patterned his life on ways of human thinking that shuts God out of the picture, and which responds in pretty predictable ways when it comes to the moment of crisis. He folds because he's not ready. He hasn't trained in regarding the Lord as holy. It begins in your own heart and in your own mind, at home, in the quiet places where you determine who you will be before all the voices of the world come in on your life. In 1 Peter 3, we hear the same message as that of Isaiah 8. Do not fear. Do not be frightened. But in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. Set Jesus apart with the highest regard. Regard him as holy. Well, we've heard words this week speaking about Emmanuel. Emmanuel is connected with the limits of God's judgment. The Assyrians will flood the land, arising to the neck, but they'll be limited because this is Emmanuel's land. Emmanuel restrains them. Christians recognize Emmanuel as speaking about Jesus. I loved it when Cohen said, Emmanuel is Jesus, just before that song. I said, yes, good, someone said it nice and clear, because Matthew makes that connection for us explicitly in Matthew 1:23. Isn't it interesting that the restraint of God's judgment in Emmanuel is noted here in Isaiah? Because that's exactly what Jesus does at the cross to bring salvation to his people, whose judgment is truly up to the neck, and to restrain God's judgment from completely consuming his people. He faces their punishment in his death at the cross. And so there's this personal response here coming through to recognize Jesus and to regard him in the highest place as we connect Jesus with Emmanuel in this passage. Well, folks, I'm going to come to the end of our passage today. Just as Isaiah and his sons were signs and symbols to a world around them, my prayer this week has been that the congregation of Hope at the Hill would stand as a message of hope in Emmanuel to the world around us, because we hold on to the Lord with the highest regard. My prayer has been that we would stand apart from the crowd and not be driven by fear. And there's a lot of ways that we could be driven by fear. I was thinking, what are the fears that we face? Security situations in various parts of the world, the war in Ukraine, the Pacific, a COVID resurgence. The fear that drives you to keep up with your professional commitments and make that the highest priority in your life. Fear of missing out, fear of being alone, fear of failure, fearing of being burnt once again by whatever it is you've faced before. What is in the engine room of your heart, your head, and your emotions? Who do you hold with the highest regard? As we go on in Isaiah 8, this is really my last point. In verses 24 to 25, with Judah considering Assyria as the biggest player in the room, we hear these words: my people who live in Zion, do not be afraid of the Assyrians who beat you with a rod and lift up a club against you, as Egypt did. Very soon my anger against you will end and my wrath will be directed to their destruction. So God will use the Assyrians as an instrument of judgment, but they will be consumed by God. And the people of Judah just need to hold on to God, and we need to do that too. Let me pray. Heavenly Father, as we consider the things around us that cause us to fear, and as we think about the things that drive our lives and that might make us react in certain ways to the things around us, I pray that you would help us to weigh carefully the things in the room in terms of what we consider and think about as most important. And I pray that you would give us a godly, biblical perspective that sees that you are the biggest player by far, with the most regard, and that you are eternal. And Father, I pray that you would help us to live according to that truth, knowing that salvation is found in you. Just as Isaiah's name means salvation, the Lord is salvation. I pray that we would know that hope of salvation in you. And just as judgment is restrained through Emmanuel in 8th century BC, I pray that we would hold on to Jesus and know his mercy and grace in our lives in place of the punishment of death for our sin. So, Father, I pray that your people would hold you with the highest regard in the middle of the storms of life, in whatever comes our way. And I pray that the drivers in our lives, in the engine room of our hearts and minds and wills, would be clearly set by you. I pray all of this in your name. Amen.